This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. A Black Lives Matter organizer has just been convicted of the bizarre-sounding charge of felony lynching. 28-year-old Jasmine Richards of Pasadena, California, is the first African-American to ever be tried in a courtroom for this controversial lynching charge that apparently only recently has been renamed as the charge of, quote, attempting to unlawfully remove a suspect from police officers. The charge stemmed from her arrest in August 2015 over an altercation at a restaurant across the street from where Richards was with other organizers. Her supporters say she is being politically persecuted for her activism with Black Lives Matter. A sentencing hearing will be held next week, and Richards faces a possible one-year sentence. She's already been taken into custody. My guest is Anthony Ratcliffe. He's a professor of Pan-African Studies at California State University, Los Angeles, and he's an organizer with Black Lives Matter. Welcome to the program, Anthony.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, how do you explain this so-called lynching charge? Can you give our audience a sense of what took place in August 2015? It wasn't a sort of civil disobedience, planned action that Jasmine was involved in, although she has been involved in such actions in the past and has been arrested around such actions in the past. What happened in August?
So in August, a group of people in the Black Lives Matter Pasadena chapter, I'm actually in the Los Angeles chapter, they held a weekly or a monthly meeting in a park. I don't know exactly the name of the park.
La Pintoresca Park. I live very close to it.
Okay, so great. And so in that park, they usually come together, and there's a lot of young people, a lot of young Black people in Pasadena that go there. And so that's where they hold their meetings. And so this day, they had a march. It was actually a march for peace. Trying to raise the issue of, you know, Black Lives Matter is also here fighting against intercommunal violence. So they were out there marching, doing this march, and then they ended up at the park. And across the street from the park, there was allegedly a woman who had been stopped because she supposedly had taken something from a restaurant. And so she was actually in an altercation with the restaurant owner. And that's when the police were called. And so as the police were called, the people in Black Lives Matter saw what was going on. They saw the first confrontation between the store owner and the Black woman. And so they kind of were going over there to make sure that things looked like they were getting out of control. So they were kind of going there to see what was going on. Then when the police rolled up, the police initially weren't going to arrest the woman because they didn't see what had happened. But then the store owner allegedly said that he wanted to have a citizen's arrest. And so that's when the police began to intervene. After that point is when people from Black Lives Matter, Jasmine, other folks, were really just trying to see what was, trying to make sure the police weren't getting out of control. A number of police came up, and so that's where the confrontation first started. But the thing that one thing we recognize, and actually going to the court, to the trial, and there's a video, we realized that at the whole time, the police were pretty much focused on Jasmine. You know, they knew who Jasmine was. And this is because Jasmine had long been fighting in Pasadena for justice for Kendrick McDade, who was killed in 2013. And so she had they knew who she was. They knew she was very active. And so they pretty much were focusing all their attention on her. And so that's some things that have come out in the court trial as well. And so we were just, for me, I wasn't at the event, so I didn't know exactly what happened. But, you can see that all the attention of the police, all the videotaping was focused on her. Even though she wasn't directly the one, trying to grab anybody, or their argument of attempted lynching was because I guess some of the people that were there were, trying to stop the police from going to their car. But the focus was on her only. And she's the only one out of everybody that was there that was even arrested later and brought to trial.
Right. So she is the founder and leader of Black Lives Matter Pasadena. Mm-hmm. I live in Pasadena and I've met Jasmine at the park that she organizes. And a little bit later in our conversation, I'll play an excerpt of an interview I did with her there. But it seems to me that what really sort of scares the police about Jasmine is, and about the people she organizes with, the young Black folks that she organizes with, is this sense that they feel a collective unity around the way in which the police interact with young Black people in Pasadena. That, because this was a case where there was a young Black woman involved, that they felt they all ought to be involved. And this is sort of dangerous, I think, for the police when they see that one person feels that they ought to be part of what someone else is going through, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that we heard in the court, and the judge was trying to argue that, this idea of people intervening in what police are doing is a bad precedent, and she didn't want to let that happen. However, that there's so many instances that we've seen across the country where police, wrongfully arrest somebody, they abuse people. And so, the idea of people now, videotaping police arrests, trying to make sure that when people are being arrested, they're not being abused. People felt that some of the, I mean, stuff that I've talked to, people that I've talked to, and also stuff that I've read showed that people felt the police were being excessively, hard on the woman in the first place. And so these things were what raised the issue with the Black Lives Matter Pasadena and the young people that were there, and they just didn't want to see her get harassed or beat down or whatever. And that's what I think made the police more fearful, is because it is a sense of that young people. I mean, these are, Jasmine's in her late 20s, but like a lot of the people she was with were like 14 and 15. They just didn't want to see this woman be assaulted or be beat down or killed or whatever that might have happened in police custody. So they were willing to intervene, or at least to make sure that the arrest was done peacefully and there was nobody that got hurt.
And that's because people don't trust police, right? I
Yeah.
mean, the police have shown themselves to be time and again, over and over and over again, untrustworthy, even though they have been heavily invested as the protectors of our society. But time and again, they have let society, particularly Black society, down.
Yeah, I mean, and Jasmine will tell you that the Pasadena police, like growing up there, she's had a lot of encounters. She knows a lot of these police officers. They know who she is, and so they kind of say her name, and they know her story and kind of what happened to her brother and all these different things. And so, she knows that a lot of it is just sort of the way that small town police officers sometimes act, right? Like they act like they're above authority or above impunity. And so I think it's for them, it was just like, it wasn't a, I don't have full understanding, and I don't want to speak for them, for the people that are involved, but it's a feeling of like, look, you come in here, we're trying to have a peaceful march. In addition to the police that were there for the arrest, there were also police helicopters that were surveilling. During the court case, one thing that did come out, her lawyer, on cross-examination of one of the police officers, kind of got the police officer. He was very choked up. He couldn't really speak about it, but pretty much had him admit that they had already known that Black Lives Matter was having this march. There was already some sort of investigation of what was going on, and so that's why they were there in the first place as well. So even though they say that it was just by them going there for this arrest, there were already police kind of surveilling the park, already, the helicopter was already prepared to be there. So a lot of that had to do because, Jasmine is very pro I mean, Jasmine is an inspiration. She's someone that we all look up to because, she's someone that comes from an area where people are forgotten, but she's able to reach those young people and get them to see that they have power. And I think that's what fear, that's what the state and that's what police and other people fear most, because she feels like, I have really very little to lose, and I'm willing to fight for my people. And I think that's really what makes the police and other people scared of her.
In fact, let's play an excerpt of an interview that I did with Jasmine Richards. This was just about a month or so before she was arrested for the incident in question.
It's crazy. When we shut down Old Town, they came at us in such a volatile way, and we didn't back down. I seen Miss Slaughter, which is Kendrick McDade's mother, take her power back in his little sister, and they got in the police's face and they let them know exactly how they felt. And so that right there, that empowers me. I can't even explain the feeling. It's like a feeling that starts within your toes and it rises up and it goes into your spirit. And then something just comes out of you like a lion. And it feels so good. It's like stuff that was deep, deep, deep down and just was bursting to come out. If that explains anything.
And that's Jasmine Richards explaining to me how empowered she has felt when she has been engaged in activism, political activism around Black Lives Matter. Now, her lawyer says that she is being politically persecuted, and what you described before we went to the clip about the police and sort of knowing Black Lives Matter was that knowing her by name does seem to point in that direction. As far as you can tell, would you say that they do want to make an example out of her?
Definitely. I mean, the idea that they're using, I mean, she's the only person out of all these people that were supposedly there, that got arrested. They're using this archaic law, which thankfully Holly Mitchell, one of the state state legislative people changed, you know, which even though I think it's now we wish the law was still named lynching, but that's still what the idea behind the law is. To use that law against her really demonstrates just how much they're trying to do whatever they can to get her off the streets and really to send a message to all Black Lives Matter. Right. Like people are there's a lot more surveillance going on. We, you know, there's a lot of people are doing this kind of work. And so we know that Jasmine has been surveilled. Jasmine has been watched. You know, I've seen videos of police officers coming up to her and speaking to her and telling her, oh, I heard about your brother, and like not even having introduced themselves to each other, but they just know who she is and they know her story. So it really makes us realize that she's someone that they see as a threat. And really, she's a threat, like I said before, because not only can she, you know, she can speak in any context, right? Like she can speak at the universities, and she comes to Cal State LA a lot and works with the students here. She can speak with professors and with other folks, you know, the high and mighty, but she can also, you know, reach the youth and the disenfranchised. And I think that's the biggest fear, right? Because she can resonate in these different contexts. And I think that they fear a person like Jasmine who can really get people to be motivated. And she's very inspirational, and her ability of speaking just does get you, you know, like, okay, I feel like I do have power now. And I think that that's, at the end of the day, that's really what the state fears most, is the idea that we are empowered and we do have power to you know, demand change and to fight for our lives. And I think that when they see that, that makes them fearful, because they want to see themselves as the ones who are, you know, able to tell us what we can and can't do many times. And Jasmine lets everybody know that that's not the case.
Now, Anthony, I understand that the jury that convicted her was a unanimous decision, not a single African-American on the jury, mostly white, couple of Asians and one Latino. Mm-hmm. It, to me, all of this sounds like the very system that Jasmine has been critiquing, pointing out, fighting against, is enveloping and entrapping her and silencing her.
Definitely. And I think that's really a thing that BLM has talked a lot about, is that you know, at all levels, right? Like it's on the street, police are able to kill or arrest and beat, and there's no accountability there. But then in the courtroom, you know that, you know, when Black people go to trial, it's very rarely when you get a jury of your peers, and this is what happened in Jasmine's case. And I think that to me, that this should be a clear case where this case is going to be overturned on appeal, because they not only did they have a very small pool of Black people to pull from there, but the Black people that did come, they immediately kicked them off the trial. And we've seen this in other BLM cases where the prosecutor has purposely won out of their way to exclude as many of the Black people from those trials. And it's just a way to sort of say, we don't trust, you know, we don't think the Black people are going to be able to be fair. Right. But it just kind of shows that they have their own bias, and they believe that they got to get the Black jurors off that trial. And this is what happened with Jasmine's case. And so, I mean, the thing going in there and seeing the jury, like they definitely were, a number of them were choked up. We don't know what happened in the jury room. They didn't deliberate that long. It wasn't like it was, you know, 2, 3, 4 days of just, you know, hashing things out. It was a couple hours. And so it really makes us feel that they kind of were already, it was a foregone conclusion. The thing that happened too, one more thing, is that the prosecutor made a lot of, and I think what made it easier for the jury to convict was the prosecutor try to make correlations between Black Lives Matter and gangs in Pasadena.
Wow, that is huge. Okay, so linking Black Lives Matter, a political organization that's trying to hold police accountable, equating them to gangs.
To gangs, you know, and part of that was because the march that Jasmine and others had organized was a peace march that really did call together, you know, gang members that were trying to actually, you know, work things out. And I think that was the thing that made them fearful. And so what the prosecutor did was argue that this is, you know, sort of, she made the correlation between BLM and a gang in Pasadena. And so I think that that was really what made the jury able to be a little more fearful. And then one other thing the prosecutor said in her closing arguments, she actually also correlated Black Lives Matter to the Ku Klux Klan. You know,
what?
By saying it's equivalent, right? Like that this idea of taking somebody out is what the Klan did. Therefore, you know, that's wrong. And so this is wrong as well. And, we're, you know, the irony behind doing that is not lost on us. And so we really feel that we have to keep fighting for Jasmine. And that's what we're not going to let this just go silently away.
You know, the other thing that in this case that I think is really important for us to think about is this constant sense that people like Jasmine, those who are willing to stand up and confront police nonviolently, are asking for it. That, you know, if you just didn't get in their face a lot, and I've seen Jasmine do this, I've seen videos where she'll find, you know, if she sees a police officer, even if she's in a convenience store, and it's a police officer that she can identify, particularly someone involved in the killing of Kendrick McDade, she'll just go right up to them and talk to them. She's not threatening them. There's no violence, but her words, she is letting them know that she sees them, she identifies them, and of course they hate that. Now, Najee Ali with Project Islamic Hope said that her conviction is, quote, hopefully a learning lesson for young, misguided activists who believe disruption and violence is a tool for solving the problems in our community. I was blown away by the statement.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to talk a lot about him. But I do agree with
him. But he's quoted in the media all the time.
Yeah, I mean, he's seen as the spokesperson for a lot of these issues, but his way is definitely through the channels of power and working with directly with the police. And that's one thing that BLM is not trying to do. We're trying to demonstrate that. One thing that last week, Angela Davis came to Cal State LA and she spoke, and she said that it's important that we begin to denormalize the police. Like the idea that the police, you know, without the police, like the whole notion of the thin blue line, that without that, there would be chaos. I don't agree with that. I think that people in many ways could actually do things a lot better themselves. A lot of the problem is we don't have the resources, right? We believe that police don't make us safer, that actually the resources are what we need to make our community safer. And so that's one thing that Jasmine definitely felt in her heart, right? And she believed that together, her comrades out there in Pasadena, young people, community folks, people that were formerly gang members, right? Like that's what we're trying to reach is folks that are out there. She's out there working with them. And I think that demonstration of the police are not, this idea is not natural. You know, the prison industrial complex is not natural. It's not normal. Yeah. It's something that we've allowed to happen. And so she wasn't going to allow that to just go without a fight. And her ability to sort of speak to power in that way, it scares them. And so I think that's really at the end of the day why she was specifically targeted, because they don't like, they want to make an example out of her. And if they can put her down, then a lot of us will, you know, kind of like what Najee said, fall in line and be good people and speak directly to power in a more, quote, civil way. You know,
Anthony, where does Jasmine's case fall within the sort of national landscape of people being arrested, charged, and convicted who are involved with Black Lives Matter, whether directly for their activism or because, you know, there was some excuse created around another incident, but, you know, it seems clearly linked to their activism. Is Jasmine one of just a few people or the only person who has received such a serious charge? Because we know Black Lives Matter LA activists have in recent times been charged, had their charges dropped. A couple of them were charged with misdemeanors. So where does Jasmine's case fall within that?
In LA, it's definitely the most extreme. It's one of those things where we've had Black Lives Matter 7 that were recently tried, and it was a hung jury initially, and then the prosecutor decided not to retry. We have Evan and Luz who were tried, and they got convicted on a few misdemeanor charges. But Jasmine was the first time that we saw somebody, you know, with a felony charge actually be convicted. And so, you know, nationally, there actually, I was able to find three other cases. But they're not the same sort of case, right? Like the other cases are three young men in different cities. One was in Oakland, one was in Ferguson, and one was in Baltimore. And they were directly during sort of uprisings and rebellions, young people that weren't really organizers either, right? They were just young people that got out there, kind of the uprising had kind of got them involved, and they got convicted for, one was for an arson, another one was for destroying a police car in Baltimore, and the third one was for allegedly assaulting a person with one person assaulting another person with a hammer. And so, but they're not directly related in the same way that Jasmine's was, who was clearly an organizer of a nonviolent protest that was very, you know, about agitation. Right,
and long-term organizing.
Long-term.
So, yeah, I understand that her sentencing hearing is next week. And so that, she faces a possible sentence of 1 year. She is very shaken up, according to reports, which anybody would be in that position. What do you hope to happen next week?
Well, we really want to make sure that she gets, you know, if there's a way to intervene to give her no time, right? Like that's something that we're trying to push. You know, Jackie Lacey is the DA of LA County, and she's the only one now, I think, that can actually, you know, speak to the judge to say, look, this is a case that we'd rather you not go forward with, you know, give her the least amount of time served, give her probation. Like we're hoping that could be something that can come out of this. We're definitely calling people out to pack the courthouse. There was a good turnout the whole time that Jasmine was on trial, but we need more people there to sort of say, like, no, not on our watch. We're not going to allow this sort of political prosecution and railroading of Jasmine Abdullah, Jasmine Richards, to occur. And so we want people to come out next Tuesday morning if they can.
And we'll post details for the Southern California audience who might be interested and able to do that. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Sonali. Have a great day.
You too. Anthony Ratcliffe is a professor of Pan-African Studies at Cal State University, Los Angeles, and organizer with Black Lives Matter. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.